You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
So Microsoft has done a study on this, and various employment agencies like Robert Half has done studies on this, and Cronus has done studies on this, that a four-day work week actually does lead to not only the same productivity as a five-day work week, but significantly up to 40% more productivity. Because I guess people are more relaxed, they're happier,
yep.
And they cite all these things, that their quality of life is better, so they work harder.
Well, I just think when you're in the shower, when you're on an airplane, when you're in a time in which somebody is telling you, this is time in which you cannot be productive. You can't be. You can't sit here and write emails, you can't do cold outreach, you can't whatever. You don't have access. Your brain feels relieved of this idea of like being focused on trying to create something and or get specific work done. And as a result, it's able to wander and come up with different ideas and this kind of thing. And I think that a lot of people would be better served by having some of that time than having to be in an office thinking about like, how do I look productive? Or how do I look like I'm working hard? Or how do I create this next idea or whatever?
Brendan, we're going to talk about you think it's better, and I agree, by the way, you think it's better if we have a four-day work week than a five-day work week. I totally agree. I did my homework on this, but let me hear what you have to say about the four-day work week.
Yeah, so first of all, I think the best situation would be—
You just don't want to work.
I really
can
don't.
I have a day off every week? That's your goal.
I'm not even going to hide it, dude. I feel like this will be terrible for my like hireability moving forward.
Like people will say, hey boss, did you hear his episode on the James Altucher show? He kind of said he doesn't really want to work. So I don't know if we should hire him.
All right. So here's what founds this is I'm writing this whole comedy, tons of comedy about work lately. Cause I feel like the work is changing. Everybody's like, everything is changing. But like there's so much evidence to show that you just shouldn't be working as much as we're working. That like, so just to start this conversation off, one of the first bits that I discovered, not even doing that much research into this, was that the average American who purportedly works for an 8 to 9 hour day actually, according to studies, only accomplishes between 3 to at most 5 hours of work.
I think that, and that's being very generous.
Oh, it's got to be hugely generous. I think that the average person probably only gets done 2 to 2.5 hours of work a day.
I think
that meaningfully moves the needle forward.
Yeah, like at you know, I worked one job that was a cubicle job in an IT department in a Fortune 500 company, and I couldn't even understand what was happening. Like, people would get in at 10 a.m., then they'd go for a smoking break, then they'd go for a two-hour lunch, then another smoking break, and then the day's over. And then there'd be meetings, because meetings I don't really count as work. Like, no. There'd be meetings every day.
But they just take up, they're a waste of time.
Yeah.
And like, this is, I just wrote a joke about this the other day. I said, like, the most difficult part of an 8-hour workday is figuring out what to do with 90% of your time. Like, yeah. You just, and the other 10%.
Oh, yeah, by the way, then they're surfing the web now, yeah. Like the social media. I mean,
if you are employing someone and you give them a computer, you are paying them to learn how to get better at looking up cat memes. Like, there's, the whole workday is just sitting down and figuring. I mean, like, 90% of every office job I've had, and this is at companies where I've led teams that have created millions of dollars of pipeline and then have created, therefore, lots and lots of realized revenue. 90% of my day is figuring out what the hell I should be doing or what the hell anybody should be doing.
So for me, I don't know about 90%, but I feel like a big chunk of that 90% would be, I never wanted to go to the bathroom because everyone on the floor is sharing the same bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to go to the bathroom next to my boss or the cubicle person next to me. Like, yeah. That's disgusting.
But James, how do you watch episodes from Netflix if you're not in the bathroom at work?
Well, I would map out all of the available bathrooms within a 2 or 3 block radius.
No, you wouldn't? Would you really do this?
Yeah, yeah. So I worked on 42nd and 6th, and the New York Public Library was kind of down the street.
Yeah.
And I would sometimes I would have to run there. And on the 4th level basement, you know, these libraries have like all these basements like the antique and rare books.
Yeah.
I'd find the most obscure basement level, find the one bathroom there. And it was never, nobody even knew it existed.
Yeah.
And I would just stay there, like watching, not watching Netflix then, but like reading rare and antique books for an hour in the bathroom. So
this is a blog post that's yet to become viral, is the best public bathrooms to visit in Manhattan.
Yeah, I feel like almost like it was a Seinfeld episode. I think George did actually make this kind of map, but I really was terrified of going to the bathroom next to my boss. But back to the 4-day work week. You know why there's a 5-day work week?
I think you can tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's because Henry Ford, he ran a study that showed that people were more productive if they only worked 8 hours and if they had 2 days to get off.
I think you're correct. And I think he was building off of the fact that there was never really more than a 6-day work week, because Sunday was a day of rest. Yeah. But, you know, then some companies around the turn of this, of the, you know, 1800s to 1900s were like, well, we want the Jews to work as well. And we're going to only be able to hire them if we give them Saturday off. So it became Saturday and Sunday. And so it's just sort of arbitrary. But then some studies have
I would say Henry Ford did not do that. Henry Ford, known
right, Henry Ford hated Jews. Yeah. So he didn't give a shit about that. But did he actually support Hitler? I don't know.
I'm sure he didn't say a lot of strong words against him.
Steve, do you know?
I know he didn't like Jews. I know that much.
I don't even know when he was.
Well, let me tell you, Henry Ford missed out, because there are some great Jews.
Exactly, he missed out. Yeah. Well, anyway, we're not gonna go down this whole path. But
I mean, can you imagine Henry Ford having to work that hard to just keep his? I mean, if he had liked Jews, he wouldn't have had to hire so many accountants. That was a bad joke.
We can work on it, though. We can workshop that.
You can edit that out.
You know, Hitler in 1933 said, I don't care if Germany gets a few years behind in science. We're just getting
Did
all the
really
Jews
Did he really say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And because all the Nobel Prize winners at that point, like, think of Einstein. They were German.
Sam Harris has this great quote where he's like, if you were able to, he goes, just judging through the Jews that came to America after the war, the amount of scientific progress, like, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like,
missiles and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But
we're way off topic.
5-day work week. But there are studies that show if you give people a 4-day work week, because of the reasons you just said about productivity, that people aren't really that productive anyway. I was about to say, well, maybe they need that 8 hours to find the right 2 hours to work, but I think that's BS. That's giving people too much credit. So Microsoft has done a study on this, and various employment agencies like Robert Half has done studies on this, and Cronus has done studies on this, that a four-day work week actually does lead to not only the same productivity as a five-day work week, but significantly up to 40% more productivity, because I guess people are more relaxed, they're happier.
Yep.
They cite all these things, that their quality of life is better, so they work harder during those 4 days.
Well, I just think, so if I had it my way, I thought about this, if I had it my way, I think that if I was running a, the first thing I need to say is, even if I was CEO of a major corporation, I would also maybe be not sure if I would do this. But because it feels like there's just so much culture around this constant, like, you know, and I say 40 hours of work, like nobody who's in an office works 40 hours. You're working 45 to 50 hours normally. But if I was CEO, I think if I could design it and I knew, and the data showed that it would help work, what I think I would do is I would have 4 days of work, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Ugh. Why the middle of the week? Because don't we want like the three-day weekend?
I mean, whatever. Maybe I'd do like flex time. You can take Friday or Wednesday off. I think for me, I feel better if I have 2 days of work, then I take a day off, then okay. I have two more days of work. But I would also limit, I would say you're 6 hours a day, and of those 6 hours, only 1 hour can be meetings. Because it forces people to figure out what the heck they need to have decisions on. Most of the meetings that I've ever been in have been basically crowdsourcing decisions and trying to figure out like different ideas. And if you don't come to that meeting prepared, or if they don't come prepared, it's a complete waste of time.
Yeah, I can't actually think of any meeting that's been ever worthwhile. Like I used to run a hedge fund, and I would have to fly to different places to as I was raising money. But half the job of running a hedge fund is raising money. And never once have I flown to any place and actually had a successful business outcome from it. Like maybe it's because I just wasn't good at sales or whatever, but there's plenty, you kind of need to just find the opportunity where you are. Like traveling is,
yeah.
Well, traveling sort of proves this point though about the 4 hour work week or 4 day work week, because when you travel, you're essentially skipping that whole day.
Oh yeah.
If you're flying to Chicago or even California from New York, that day is shot.
Done.
And you kind of, it's not like you land and say, oh my gosh, I'm a full day's work behind. I've got to catch up on the weekend.
Yeah.
You actually find that you didn't miss anything.
No.
I've never missed one thing by traveling during the work week.
And I've never been able to be productive really on the road, but like most of the best creative thinking I've had has come from one of two places. It's either been me in the shower or me on an airplane, because I'm like, I don't have anything to do. And this was before, you know, mostly before, I was doing most of my travel for sales and I was still doing comedy at the time. Before Wi-Fi was on airplanes, like that just came out, like when I was doing a lot of this stuff, which actually makes me feel old. This is the first time I've ever really felt old.
We have just aged you. Everybody else in this room is older than you. Now you're one of us. It's like you're gonna
this
be.
This is how it feels.
You're gonna be undead soon. So it's like we're gonna suck the blood out of you in podcast after podcast until you leave here super tired and wondering. And you're going to be like all pale, your hair's going to be gray, and we're all going to look younger.
It's going to be like,
to steal your youth and vitality.
It's going to be like that scene from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Feel like someone can gif my face and put it on r/watchpeopledieinside, because it's...
While doing this podcast.
Yeah, while doing this podcast. So anyway, where I was going with this was I'd have to get out a notebook and like creatively write and just whatever. And when you're in an airplane, there's nothing to do. So you just, and a lot of that stuff is like when you are because here's what's happening. When you're in the shower, when you're on an airplane, when you're in a time in which somebody is telling you, this is time in which you cannot be productive. You can't be. You can't sit here and write emails. You can't do cold outreach. You can't whatever. You don't have access. Your brain feels relieved of this idea of like being focused on trying to create something and or get specific work done. And as a result, it's able to wander and come up with different ideas and this kind of thing. And I think that a lot of people would be better served by having some of that time than having to be in an office thinking about like, how do I look productive, or how do I look like I'm working hard, or how do I create this next idea or whatever.
Well, I guess Google was trying to sort of incorporate this idea by saying to all their employees, 20% of your time should be on your own projects outside of what your job is for Google. And that's how Gmail was created, for instance. It was in some guy's other 20% where he was just fooling around and he decided to make Google email.
Yeah.
And so they sort of had this idea in a different way. But compare it to like the 4-hour work week. So Tim Ferriss's idea that, so Tim Ferriss was like running himself ragged, running this nutraceutical company that he started. And he was just having like breakdowns because he was working too hard. And he realized, you know, there's this notion, the 80-20 rule, that 20% of what you do actually creates 80% of the value.
Yep.
So he figured if I could identify the right 20%, I only need to work, you know, 8 hours. He even wanted to call it, I think he wanted to initially call it the 2-hour work week, but his publishers thought it was too much. So I might be wrong. He mentioned something like that to me. But so he figured out the 4-hour work week would be, 4 hours would be the ideal amount of time to get 80% of the value of his work. And he figured he didn't need the final 20%. So if he was making $200,000 a year, say, with this company, okay, he could make $160,000 a year, but work only 1/5
of the
hours
of time.
Or 1/10 the hours. And then I think a lot of times people interpret that to mean then the rest of your time you spent just goofing off. But his whole point was is that you could then spend the other 36 hours doing the equivalent of
that.
9 more 4-hour work weeks. So you get the work done of 9 people.
Well, Stephen Kotler, who I think
who's coming here tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to interview soon. I'm a huge fan of his. I connected with him on LinkedIn because I read his Rise of Superman. One of the things he's fond of saying is when you're in a flow state, you're 500% more productive than you are when you're not in a flow state, which basically means if you are able to get into a flow state, let's imagine you spend 6 days of your week goofing off, doing whatever, and then through some marginal amount of low-level intensity work, figuring out how you should arrange your one day of work, then you hit that one day and you're 500% productive. You've done the entire work week in one day.
And to his point, and to the guy, I can't say his last name ever, Mihaly, whatever, who wrote...
Csikszentmihalyi.
That's how you say his last name?
I think that's how... It's Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, I think. I hear this on every podcast, by the way. And people are like, how do you say his name? I think that's how you say it.
If all you know is have this one skill of saying his name, you could probably get on every podcast to talk about flow.
Oh, but, no, I'll expect to see me on everyone in a week then.
he wrote the original book on this, I guess, in the early 90s. And his point is that, so because people always say, well, how do you get in, either how you get into flow or in the Tim Ferriss example, how do you find the right 20%? Because it's not like you just do 1/5 the work and you get 80% of the value. You kind of have to find the 20% that creates the 80%. And that's sort of the hard part. It's very hard to predict in advance. But his point in the original book on this is that the more competent you are at something, the more likely you are to end up in flow. So for instance, it's a great example among chess players is that chess players can sit at a chessboard for 6 straight hours looking at positions in tournaments. And that's they reach this flow state in there. But they're more likely to hit that flow state the higher ranked they are.
Mm.
So the more competent you are, the more you're able to kind of filter out the 80% that's not important. So you can focus on the 20% that are. And then you're more likely to hit that flow state where you're 500% more effective.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, than you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast, and the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Well, let's flip this around and talk about just in terms of performance. There's two examples I can think of, which is one is comedy, which I know we have in common, which is that one of the things like you're talking about and what Csikszentmihalyi talks about in his book is like you're filtering out the information that's not important, which is like I don't need to care about these pieces on the board because I know these are the critical pieces. That's what a chess grandmaster is thinking or just knows in his or her bones or their bones. Anyway, the comedian is like the same thing. Like I just hosted a show at an arcade bar in Chicago last week, and it was super, really crazy. There's arcade games playing. There's like all this stuff. There's so many distractions. And I remember I hit this point where I was on stage because I hosted the show. So I had to take the bullet basically and trying to create a space in which a show can occur with all of that distraction. That was my responsibility. And the way that I did it was I've done comedy for like 18 years and I just knew what I had to do to overpower this room to get their attention. But I couldn't pay attention to the TV playing or the arcade game. I just knew I got to connect with and lock in all these people in the show. And I know that I have the ability to do that because I've been doing this long enough. That's when the flow state kicks in.
Yeah, because then you know if you're, for instance, listening to the TV while you're trying to figure out how to make so-and-so laugh in the front row, you're not going to be able to do it. You're going to be distracted. So you kind of like filter out, you know, you kind of like make sure you're only focused on the distractions that will move you forward.
Yeah.
And you know how to do that because of competence.
Yeah.
So if someone just like randomly arrives at, or let's say someone's learning how to dance tango, if they're trying really hard to remember every step and every arm movement and everything, they're not going to be able to do it. They're definitely not going to be able to reach a flow state. But if they're a really competent tango dancer, they know the music, everything's perfect, they'll be able to do everything without thinking. And that's this flow state.
Yeah, I'd say like for anybody who's learned a new language, and I have another point to make about this when it comes to work, and I'll flip this around in a second. But for anybody who's learned a new language, my competency with French came in when I got drunk. And my inhibitions went away. And then I began speaking French very fluently and clearly to people.
So go to work, get drunk, get trashed, and you know exactly what to do from that point. You're pee on the boss's desk and get fired. And
you heard it here first.
But competence is an interesting thing because then you fall under like, well, does it take 10,000 hours to have competence, like Malcolm Gladwell says? Or what is like Tim Ferriss with his nutraceutical company, he had been doing it for several years, so he was competent enough to know what the right 20%
sure
was. And by the way, that applies to everything. Like 20% of the employees do 80% of the work in a big corporation. 20%
yeah.
20 and it was first noticed, I think, because someone
Pareto.
Yeah, he noticed that 20% of the seeds planted in the garden resulted in 80% of the flowers
yield.
And
yeah.
Then he found out that this kind of occurs in almost every area of nature and life, this 80-20 rule. And by the way, you could square it so that you know, ultimately you could see that like the right 1% equals essentially about 49% of the value.
Yeah.
Like you keep square, like 80-20 squared times 80-20.
5% results in 95% of the value mostly. Yeah, but let me flip this back because let me say another thing that Tim Ferriss talks about, because one of the things I notice, I've worked with a lot of startups in my sales career, and one of the things that I noticed that a lot of entrepreneurs or people who are just starting companies do is that they tend to focus on lots of things that are distractions. And then it's like, they get great ideas.
Totally. I agree with this.
They get a ton of great ideas, but they're like, you have to triage your ideas and figure out what do you need to focus on and in what order.
Right. Like in this context, a lot of people say, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen, execution is everything. The problem people have actually is not on the ideas part, and not even on doing execution. They don't know what execution to do. They're not very good at effective. There's a spectrum of good execution to bad execution. And if they're not competent and know what they're doing in terms of executing, they're going to do the wrong 80% and not the 20% that's most effective.
Yeah. I mean, think about dancing the tango. Like, there's a handful of different steps that you can do. You can be individually great at each one of those movements, but if you don't place them together correctly, you're just going to throw your partner around the dance floor and trip over yourself. But like to back up, one of the things that Tim Ferriss talks about that I think applies here is that the availability or abundance of a resource, the amount of infrastructure that grows around a resource is proportional to its availability. So if you have a lot of something, then we will have complex structures that will evolve around it.
So what do you mean? What's an example?
So the example in this case is time. So Tim, when he learns a new skill, he gives himself a date at which he's like, I have to get this. Here's the time in which I have to perform well on this, because it forces him to reverse engineer a series of like, how do I break this down in order to get good at this? And that's the thing with the 10,000 hours rule, I think, which is like, if you want to be a virtuoso, having 10,000 hours of completely uninterrupted, I'm just doing golf all day or whatever, you're going to get, or comedy, I'm going to get into a place in which I'm going to be unstoppable because I've been in so many situations that I can like, I now know in my bones how to do this. But like taking stand-up comedy as the example, the 80-20 of stand-up comedy is like, look, if you want to do a 5-minute stand-up comedy bit, write a bunch of these jokes, cut them down so that the distance between the setup and the punchline is as short and as clear as possible. Now get in front of a mirror and do this with yourself, record it 100 times and listen back to it, and then just clear it up. Now get on stage and do it. That's it. You're a stand-up comic now. You've got 5 minutes of material.
Right. And the way you just described it, though, let's say someone is not competent at learning something, they're not going to know, okay, I need to videotape myself. I need to look at it. I need to cut out these words. So they might spend a lot of extra hours doing, you know, oh, why aren't people laughing? I thought this was funny. Instead of kind of taking, what you just did was essentially find the 20% that is gets you 80% there to being a stand-up comic, as opposed to just thrashing around looking for the right techniques to do it, as opposed to just trying to be funny at an open mic, which is never going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can be, I feel like if you get up and you can be funny at an open mic, especially if it's just in front of other comics, I feel like you are in, you're already a virtuoso.
Which never happens.
Never happens. It doesn't happen to almost anybody. Yeah, no, but I mean, like, well, you talked with Annie Duke about this, like a good way to cut past a lot of this stuff is to figure out who do I talk to? I mean, at least in the 10,000 hours rule is who do I need to talk to? Whose advice I could really use, who knows what they're talking about. And that's one way to go about it. And honestly, if you're running a company and you have a team full of people, like you should be able to, if they have a direction, like no one should be hiring teams of people to try to figure out what the hell it is they're supposed to do. Like get a very small team of people to figure that out. And that's when you scale that team. And those people should be able to do that in 4 days a week.
Yeah, 4 days a week. So it might be the case, really, they only need 1 day a week, the best people. But I think, unfortunately, society is set up that everyone's going to be calling the other 4 days, like, where are you? We're all we're all working in between bathroom breaks. Like, and then we try calling you for a meeting and you're not there. So it's kind of, again, culturally, it's probably 2 or 3 days is probably optimal. All I've known is they've done research on 4 days versus 5 days. And the research seems to show that a 4 day work week is much more effective. So practically speaking, since, you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you're working 7 days a week, there's two things. Try to get more confidence so you figure out the 20% that's right. But at the very least, see if you could trim your work week down to 4 days, because you'll probably be more effective just no matter what if you just trim your week down to 4 days.
I think that you should experiment with it. Like I think, like I used to do this with Quora articles, and I do this with my 10 jokes a day now, is that I limit the amount of time I have to get them done. So I would write a Quora article in 30 minutes. And if I couldn't finish in 30 minutes, I would just finish, you know, in whatever amount of time I could. Maybe it'd be 35, maybe 40. But if I finished in less than 30 minutes, I would open a second article and start writing. But I would never allow myself to go more than like 40 minutes. It was a really short amount of time to write core articles.
That's a good idea too, because it probably forces you to break writer's block. Like you just start answering.
You just got to go. Yeah. And the same thing with my 10 jokes in the morning. So first thing I do every morning now, and I've been doing it since the beginning of the year, is I sit down and I write 10 jokes. And I have to get done within 20 minutes. So I have 2 minutes to write each joke.
And by the way, these experiments are useful. Like I'll just close with, this is an experiment I did with my own work productivity. This was when I was in graduate school. I lived a 25-hour day. So I had one less day a month, essentially. But I would, you know, one morning I'd you know, let's say wake up at 7 a.m. and go to sleep at 11 p.m. instead of 10 p.m. The next day I'd wake up at like 9 a.m. and go to, you know, midnight, and I would keep extending the day. So finally, so my work day for part of the month would essentially be from like midnight to 8 a.m. and it would just keep on cycling through.
I love this.
And it was great. It was really effective, because then your schedule, you don't fall into any bad habits. Like people say, have a routine. You don't actually get into any bad habits in your routines, because your schedule vis-a-vis your friends and your coworkers and your peers and so on is different
constantly
every single
shifting day.
Yeah. And so it actually allows you that time, like you said, on the airplane to be productive and creative in odd moments of the day when you weren't expecting it.
Well, like this is fascinating to me. First of all, I love this idea, because that is your schedule equivalent of your hair. That is just like you.
The 25-hour hair.
Yeah. It's like, it's just looking at your schedule, you'd be like, only James would do this.
Because no one really wants to deal with me anyway. So this was my excuse for being, having no friends. Well, I'm living a 25-hour day. So who am I going to have dinner with at 10 a.m.?
I can just imagine. No one wants to hang out with me. And your psychologist is like, why? And you're like, well, first of all, I have a 25-hour day.
I'm eating steak at 6 a.m. in the morning, and no one is joining me.
This is so, oh my God. The so
and drinking heavily at 4 a.m. So they're all in bed.
I don't know. That's like drinking heavily at 4 a.m. is normal in an Irish family. So let me just say this also, though, which is like, that's so fascinating, because that's the schedule that you probably got extremely good at managing your time, because that is the schedule equivalent of keeping your body off balance, which is like Bill Burr does this on stage with comedy, is like, He'll choose things that will alienate the audience from him because he wants to win them back over. You're purposefully messing your schedule up almost every day in order to work through figuring out what times are going to be useful for whatever you're doing.
Yeah, that's, I didn't think of it that way, but I was consistently writing 3,000 words a day, which is about, you know, 10 pages a day.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't really, I've done that since then, but I haven't consistently done that since then. Like then it was for years and years. I was writing 3,000 words a day while I was doing this experiment.
Yeah. Well, this is like, I think that that's the kind of thing, just to return to, like, you have to have enough knowledge to know what the 80-20 is. It's like, that's the 10,000 experiments idea, which is like, just throw out all these different things until you start getting enough data and feedback to know where those 80-20 thing is going to be, basically.
Which could lead to working 4 hours a week or 4 days a week or 25 hours a day. But yeah, the whole idea is play around and experiment with these things. The 5 day work week is just arbitrary, kind of like most things in life.
Life, yeah.
Where they're just sort of like defined, like someone defined it because of like, oh, this, the religious holiday, one group is this day, and it's just take, we can't deal, just take both days off. Like, yeah, we don't care. Yeah. And it was just sort of arbitrary. So yeah. Do you ever read these, this will be fine. You ever read these things like why the train tracks are a certain number of feet apart, like each rail on the train tracks?
No.
It's all related to how, it all goes back to how the width of horses on Roman roads.
Really?
And that it kind of defined the width of roads. Yeah. And then eventually you could trace, if you Google this, you can see it traces all the way back to how wide train tracks were spaced.
That's fascinating. It's a good thing that Tim Cook didn't exist when trains were being made, or every year train tracks would be a different width.
Is the iPhone different width every time?
Yeah, no, I mean like just the charger, everything that's just, he's just gonna, I'm glad Jay got it. I feel like he's the only one who got that joke. But
Jay started laughing. All right, Brendan, thanks so much. The 4 day work week and everything else.
Thanks, James.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.